Hello everyone, it's Richard Lewis here with another video, and today I'm going to be talking about something that I think a lot of people are excited about. I'm going to talk about what's good about it and what's bad about it, but I'm going to be talking about CSGO finally coming to China. This is exciting news indeed. We're about to enter into a very interesting phase of CSGO history. Now, I want to just give a little bit of background, a little bit of history about Counter-Strike in China. Now, first off, it's got to be said that their 1.6 did make a little bit of a dent. Anybody who followed 1.6 back in the day will know that there was a few teams that certainly went to international events and didn't disgrace themselves, and they had decent talent. Tai Lu, perhaps most notably, although there were others. And 1.6, it was kind of a cult classic in the sense that it had a following, but it was always eclipsed by much bigger titles. In particular, Crossfire. There was the online version as well. People play CS Online, which was licensed by Nexon, I think it is. But basically, what happened was the law is, if you want to have a game released in China, you have got to have a Chinese company publish it for you. Even if you create and develop it, the law states you've got to have a Chinese company publish the game for that region. This is to stop foreign companies coming in, releasing products in China without the Chinese benefiting from it in any way. It's not unique to esports or gaming. So Valve weren't interested in that when Counter-Strike came out. They were like, you know what, we're Valve, we're good actually. We don't want to have to relinquish control. But that's changed. They are now going to be putting CSGO out in the Chinese region with the help of Perfect World. And they've got a good relationship with Perfect World, for good or ill. You'll know Perfect World if you're a Dota fan. Certainly, they are the publisher for the Chinese version of Dota 2. They've been instrumental in kind of making it this huge game, because obviously China is a huge market, especially for free-to-play games and online games that can be played in PC cafes. Now, Perfect World have also been involved in talent and production teams for Dota esports events. Dota fans will tell you that Perfect World are anything other than a perfect company. But Valve seem to have a good relationship, and that relationship has been strengthened and cemented thanks to Dota 2, and now they're ready to take the plunge with CSGO, which is very interesting indeed, because as I said, Counter-Strike has always lived in the shadow of other games, not just other games from other genres, but even other FPS, if you can believe it. I mean, I think Counter-Strike is the greatest FPS that was ever made, and I've played a lot of them. Yes, so other organizations are now, Chinese organizations are out there scrambling. They're trying to pick up all the talent in the scene. We've got, like Tai Lu, obviously, are in there. We've got Vici Gaming. I've got a list here like eHome, LGD, Edward Gaming, CyberZen. It's happening, it's finally going to happen. And I want to talk about what we can kind of expect, because there's good and bad that's going to come with this huge expansion. I'm sure maybe if you've been following this, you'll have thought of these things too. This is perhaps a kind of primer stuff you've already thought about. But I wonder, actually, if some people have thought about some of these things. So there was a leak online of a Chinese presentation for CSGO China. And a chap did some rough translations. It says 128 tick servers there. You can put your pitchforks away. It's 128 tick community servers will be supported. Matchmaking servers will still be 64 tick. Mass entertainment play, a ranking and data system, and a real time match. I don't really know what they mean by that, but let's just break down some of the things that this is going to have. It's got a cheating management system, and I guess we can sort of segue from the benefits actually that we're going to get from expanding into China. So it's actually got a very kind of intrusive, I guess is the word for it, a very scary banning system. So again, how it works in China is, if you want to get a CS account, you have to enter it with your details and what is called the Alipay credit system. Now, the Alipay credit system is a kind of, Alipay being a big company, it's an online credit system that has to be linked to your personal identification, your name, your address, phone number, and a bank account. And it's, you know, all the data about you is going to be attached to this. It's not used to calculate like your financial credit rating or your bank credit rating or anything like that. It's just for kind of online stuff. But that being said, it means if you get caught cheating in China, you will be banned and you will never be allowed to have an account again. Now, obviously, a lot of people like this idea. I'll be honest, I find it a little bit Orwellian and frightening. But a lot of people who've had games ruined by cheaters or whatever, you know, they don't give a fuck, right? They don't care. But this is something that I think is going to help crack down on one of the problems, at least, that you will see from any expansion into a new territory. One of the arguments I always had was that for Counter-Strike to make any headway now into an already saturated games market, it was going to have to go free to play. I stand by that. I would like to see the game go free to play, even though everyone cries and goes, oh, but Richard, there'll be so many cheaters. Well, in China, certainly, the way it works out there, they've got this system. Free to play is perfect for a system like that. I mean, look, I'm happy to pay for it where I live to keep those freedoms and not have my identity and all of that linked to an account. But in China, you're not going to have that option. So why not make it free to play? Why not give them the game free? If they lose their account, it's not like they can go out and make another. They will be permanently banned across all accounts. So I think that's it's not really a benefit in the sense that it's going to bring anything new that's going to impact on us in the West. But it's certainly going to clamp down on potential problems in the Chinese scene. Now, the other thing that's going to come in that I think is great and is certainly long overdue, this is something we really should have had by now over here, is the box drop rates. Now, obviously, when you open a box, I don't want to get into the ins and outs. Some people say it's gambling. And I suppose technically, kind of, yeah, maybe, I suppose, I can see it, but certainly as well, there's scarcity on an item, but there's no kind of set value. The market has dictated itself, right? And you always get something when you open a box. So I don't want to get sidetracked on this video talking about it, but you know, when I was a kid, a lot of people made the example of comparing it to baseball cards. Obviously, when I was a kid, it was football stickers, Panini stickers or Merlin, but mainly Panini. You know, I opened loads of packs trying to find an Italia 90 Roger Miller and Paul Gascoigne, you know. Obviously, those cards were made a little bit scarcer, but there was ways around it. You know, you could swap and stuff. So I don't know. I don't consider opening a box any more gambling than open a pack of stickers. Yes, you have to buy more packs to get all of them, but, you know, it's opening a pack in Hearthstone is that gambling? You know, as the most recent expansion fucking rinsed everybody, so it seemed. So I don't know. Anyway, I'm not gonna get sidetracked with that. What I do know is when you open a box of anything, right? Like, I want to know what my chances are. I want to know what the fuck I've got a potential to win, and I want to know what that potential actually is. Well, in China, you don't have a say in it. That's the fucking law. And as a result, I'll bring up this report here from PC Gamer just to source what I'm talking about. You will see that all game makers across the board will have to reveal loot box drop rates. And you can see they talk about this in relation to Overwatch, but certainly it mentions a bunch of other games as well, and Counter-Strike is definitely going to be affected. And I think this is great, and I hope that when it gets rolled out on I think it might have been rolled out, but I certainly hope it's going to come to everybody. I hope we're all going to get it, right? Because I just think that's fair. I just think that's reasonable. So actually, expanding into China might see this feedback loop of more robust legislature and regulations kind of come over to us, which is great. Now, the other key thing that everyone's going to talk about, and I don't think it's any secret here, is that expanding into China, this huge market with so many people and a good handle and understanding of esports, we're going to get insane levels of global growth. Now, I'm not just talking about from a competitive perspective, but here's the good fucking news. We can quite happily talk about it from a global, an esports perspective, because you can see here, this is one of the slides. The CSGO China Pro League is going to be coming out now. Details on that are pretty slim at the moment, but I think we can assume that it's going to be perhaps similar to the kind of Kespa Run tournaments we're used to in South Korea, and probably what we're used to in terms of ESEAs and ESLs, the Pro League, but the actual big lucrative leagues, you know, the ones that pretty much make up the bulk of a Counter-Strike season or a Counter-Strike year. The fact that we're going to hit the ground running and have this esports infrastructure and all those organizations I mentioned earlier have already picked up teams with a view to competing in it. Well, holy fucking shit. Not only have we just got another, you know what, 10, 12 huge brands with money to spend coming into Counter-Strike, looking to develop, get the best out of talent in a new region. But on top of that, these are going to be the kind of organizations that are going to have the clout to travel, to compete abroad, to come to LAN events. And actually, I think we're going to have an entire new meta, because if you watch Ty Lue, and you remember how Ty Lue did when they first started coming to international events, they had a few upset results because people were like, what the fuck are they doing? They're just wolfpacking around the fucking map. Nobody really was playing that particular type of style. And then when they kind of got found out and there was all sorts of internal shit going on, which we'll come to in a second, their results started dropping off. But I think when you know, we need to acknowledge this, you know, whether you want to accept it or not, it's just fucking true. Different regions approach Counter-Strike in different ways. That's always been how it was. It was always one of the interesting things about seeing North American teams and European teams go at it, was this contrasting style, who would win. So now we've got China, right? It's definitely going to happen. But let's talk about other aspects of the growth. And that's going to be, well, the fact that there's going to be investment. Now, these companies that are putting money in from China, I mean, dude, I'll tell you about Chinese League of Legends. Millionaires, billionaires, sons of billionaires, businessmen who are hugely successful, just also wanting to just have, you know, because they like the game, they just want to have a team. All the sponsors that get on board because they've got business relationships with those people. This is going to be phenomenal. This is a real money sink for China. And here's the thing, that money, I'm not talking about trickle down economics, but any money that's put into esports that helps grow something collectively can mean money for other people, because a sizable amount of investment, it's proof of concept, other investors will do it. The bigger the market, the more money being spent in the market, the more robust it appears, the more comfortable people feel putting that money into the market. It's going to have a huge global knock-on effect, and hopefully the money's legitimate and not crazy and is backed up with very real intentions. But for appearance's sake, in the short term, everyone's going to be wanting a fucking piece. Like, wow, we've got this Chinese market to exploit now. You know, we can take the Chinese numbers and start showing them to our sponsors. And that's going to be the other key thing here. Stream numbers. Ooh, it's the fucking, you know, it's pretty much what esports is driven on. If you think about the development and the success of esports these past few years, it's been predicated on the streaming phenomenon and streaming numbers, and in particular, the stellar success of Twitch. That's what we all talk about these days. How many people are watching? That is the metric of success. It's the number of people watching that enable us to go to TV companies and go, well, look, you know, you've got a million people watching your shit. We got a million people watching our shit. We produce our shit for a fraction of the cost of your shit. Why don't you get on board with this? And most TV companies are going, well, yeah, actually, this is not just cheaper, but it also goes into a demographic that ain't watching TV anymore. We want to get in. And the streaming numbers, especially, everyone says they're bullshit coming out of China. I say that. I agree. The good news is that with more investment and more legitimate types of business and a genuine competitive league, we're going to get a better handle on the numbers, the spikes when people are view botting, when people are massaging the figures. Maybe we were wrong. Maybe they weren't bullshit at all. The just general thinking is, though, that Chinese numbers can't really be believed. Doesn't stop big companies putting them out there to massage their own figures. And ostensibly, I guess it doesn't really fucking matter, does it? Because at the end of the day, investors don't know. They just see a number on a page. Sponsors don't know. They just see a number on a page. Rival companies from rival types of media, they don't know. They just see a number on a page. And the good news is the number on the page is going to be fucking huge because the Chinese market loves to watch esports, whether it's a bunch of fucking bots or not. Who fucking knows? I guess who fucking cares? So that's going to be huge, the stream numbers. Now, the other thing that no one's really talking about as well is Chinese fans. Aren't just going to support Chinese teams. They're not just going to stay in a vacuum. Chinese fans are going to go to events. Chinese fans are going to watch other streams once they fall in love with the game. Chinese fans are going to support Western teams. I remember talking to Khan, the general manager of Fnatic. He went to China many times as a competitor for a Swedish team. He was fucking mobbed. This was in 1.6. He was mobbed by Chinese fans. They were treated like gods out there. And everybody wanted an autograph and was hugely respectful and really wanted to see this team. You know, Fnatic were the best team in the world at the time, Patrick was telling me about. But, you know, this is the reality that you're going to get Chinese fans. Chinese fans are going to buy your products. Chinese fans are going to want to have, like, let's say, for example, Cloud9, the most popular flair on the CSGO subreddit. Well, Chinese fans might like Cloud9. They might like a bit of nothing. They might remember him if they're old school fans. They might want to buy shirts. Well, now all of a sudden, we're going to have to get, instead of having the shirts made in China and sent to America to be sold, we're going to probably have to do it the other way around and sell some fucking sick merch out in China for this new emerging market. But of course, it's going to have to be, you know, cost reflective. So lots of exciting opportunities come out of just this growth into China, and all of them are fairly obvious, but the key thing I haven't seen a lot of people really talking about is this league and how big is it going to be and how much money is going to be up for grabs and what's it going to do to develop the scene, develop the grassroots. I'm optimistic. I personally think we are going to see unprecedented growth as a result of this in CSGO. We've kind of not plateaued. We're still growing. All the numbers point to that. But this is a shot in the arm. This is a new market. You know, but the numbers are going to accelerate and skyrocket. But anyway, that's the good stuff. What about the bad? Well, let's start. China, it's a bit of a law unto itself, isn't it? And they kind of do things the way they want to do things. Nobody's really going to have any influence in it. I wonder how much influence Valve's going to have, what with this partnership with Perfect World, honestly. And there's a few things that do make me incredibly nervous. You might remember the Ty Lue situation. I did a video about it, which did reasonably okay. It got 40,000 views. People were upset about it. But basically, to give you a summary of the Ty Lue situation, I'll refer you to this HLTV report, which was kind of the response from one of the players. But basically, two players so Ty Lue had some internal problems. Some of the players were in contract negotiations and wanted to contact other organizations and try and leave and get a better deal for themselves. So basically, Ty Lue fucking, you know, kicked them, benched them, and then also used their influence in the scene, as you can see here, to go to various other tournaments, ESL China, WESG, the Pro Gamer League, and WCA, and say, well, these players can no longer play in your league. And the long story short is, even though it kind of all worked out in the end, the players had to kind of suck that up in the short term. And I think that's really fucking dangerous. There's a huge statement here from Fancy One talking about it and saying, look, if I said anything that isn't true, please sue me. I'll take full legal responsibility. It's a really long read. I got a breakdown of it in my video if you want to go check it out. But basically, who's gonna be lobbying for these Chinese players. I mean, like, you know me, like I talk a lot about player rights. We all talk a lot about the player rights movement. I've tried to be an advocate for players all along the way. I think my record speaks for itself on this. But one thing I will say is, it's not that bad by contrast to some of the regions. It just isn't. At least in America and Europe, you've got lawyers that you can go to that are willing to work with you. They're not intimidated by the organizations and the businesses you'll have to go up against in the result of a conflict. They're not compromised. They don't work for those companies. They'll work for you. They'll represent you. You've got the power to unionize in a market that'll have to respect it. You've got a fan base that has unprecedented levels of access to you due to players due to social media. So the player can always get out, always has a platform to get their version out, that sometimes even gazumping and beating the organization to the punch. I'm not always saying players are right when they do this, by the way. Sometimes the player goes first, spins it a little bit in his favor, and the org's got to be like, oh, dude, it didn't happen like that. By that point, all the fans are on your case, and you're probably just going to have to do whatever the player wants you to do at that point just to save some face, because the brand, the sponsors, all of that has to come first. You don't have any of these luxuries in China. If you're a Chinese player, you are pretty much beholden to the organization, and the organization will do whatever they want with you, and you will comply. And this has been bore out in multiple esports. Now, I think this is a huge potential problem, because if we're going to have an international scene, you can't have one group of players enjoying luxuries and freedoms while the others that are going to be competing in those same tournaments have different types of pressures. And yeah, it's not cool. And I'd like to see somebody kind of get involved. Now, hopefully through rubbing up against each other, maybe ideas will transfer over, but I doubt that very much. Hasn't happened in other sports, by the way. And I just think that without any big companies to influence or willing to take a stand in the advance of Chinese money, you're going to see more situations like the Tai Lu one. It just makes me really fucking sad. It just makes me sad that we're going to have this new era of pro players, and maybe they're all going to be miserable and underpaid and undervalued and treated like fucking cattle. And I don't like that, because this should be an exciting time for us, an exciting time for pros, and we should all be, excited, because it's an exciting time. We should all be happy, right? But I definitely worry about that. The other thing is just the collusion and the team nonsense. You know, I did a video recently about academy sides, and I've done multiple videos about WISA and multiple team ownership and all these conflict interests we have in the West. Again, compared to China, where money is literally flowing from one hand to the other, manila envelope shit, how are we going to keep a handle on it? There was a result recently, just to kind of give you an idea of some of the things that can go on, and certainly this was brought up on Reddit, actually, and it was between these two teams here. So again, I'll take you back to, here we go, HLTV. So I'm making them fucking pigs here of that. Got two fucking screens, brilliant. There you go, we'll get rid of you. You can go away. Away. Right, okay. So it was this result here, VG versus VG Renaissance. And you can see that it was a forfeited game. Now, loads of people not really that interested in this one, but you can see the few people who do, not fishy at all. VG Renaissance forfeit when Vichy is in Sydney and can't play. Well, here's the problem. These two teams have the same ownership. So when they're due to play a game and one's an international tournament, it's very and they just forfeit rather than try and play from abroad on the internet, or they reschedule. Things like this are certainly going to raise a few eyebrows because of that shared ownership. And it's a problem we haven't really tackled in the West. It's a problem we haven't tackled in Europe, in North America. We got no chance in China. We got none. We got no chance at all. Now, look, you have to understand, despite a stance of trying to expose corruption and criminal activity, fraudulent activity in esports betting, you have to understand, I don't have a problem with gambling. I like esports gambling. I like, again, the money, the growth. It's instrumental in the development of other sports. But we aren't robust enough. We don't have the weight, the checks and balances, right? We don't have that here in esports, and that's why we've seen so many things. People throwing games for skins still going on because there will be no punishments for it. If you're a low level team, if you're a low level player who has zero chance of playing for a notable organization, zero chance of playing at a Valve approved tournament, you may as this is so fucked up to say it, but you may as well throw, because there's no downside to it other than your reputation's besmirched. And this is why it goes on in the lower tiers all the time. I remember I got in a lot of trouble talking about this for StarCraft, and I said, if you overwork your players and underpay your players, and they can make more money from fixing games than they can from going out and representing your organization and trying the hardest, some are going to slip. And especially when, towards the end of StarCraft, you were just watching, because Blizzard's mismanagement, you were just watching a game swirl down the toilet. You know, obviously people were going to fix matches. And they did. And, you know, I'm not saying it's right, but I'm just saying you got to expect it to happen. And at the moment in CSGO, because it's not deemed to be a prosecutable offense, no one, you know, I see this law in America get bandied around, you know, about bribery and stuff. No one's going to follow that up. No one's going to follow it up for an esports game. You would have to, first of all, even make the argument that esports falls under the remit of sports, and the piece of legislature, the law, applies. Legislation, sorry. So this is a nightmare, and it's an even bigger potential nightmare. I get messages all the time telling me this game is fixed in China. This game is fixed in China. Now, hopefully, with the development of the league, that's gonna at least potentially give consequences. But as things stand, low-level Chinese players getting underpaid, amateur players, yeah. They're throwing for money, they're throwing for skins, and it's all going to be covered, and there's going to be not a fucking damn thing we can do about it over here, right? And certainly no one's going to talk about it over there, because that's real consequences. Over here, you get a ban, you know, you still get to have a career of some sort. Over there, if anyone ever slips out, it's the death of your career in multiple ways, and possibly jail time, you know. So this is an issue, and I worry about it quite a bit, honestly. In addition to that, just kind of touching on match fixing, if you think I'm kind of making stereotypes, because I know in the last video I was like, you know, in Eastern Europe and Russia, yeah, you know how it is, and I said, like, we got to be adult about it, we got to talk about it, these things are more common in those regions. And if you think I'm making it up and I'm making Chinese stereotypes, I'm not saying all Chinese people are corrupt. I mean, for starters, there's way more of them, right? So it's probably in line with the percentage of everybody else. But equally, there's measures of there's levels of control over there that are leveraged against players, so they can't do a fucking thing about it. Let's have a look at this thing. This was a really good report, actually, over on Gosu Gamers. Can I close that window? Let me just see if I can do that, because I've fucked up and opened two windows like an idiot. Let me just see if I can... Let's see if that works. No, it doesn't. Right, whatever. Fuck it, I'll fix that later. So anyway, you can see here, this was a report on Gosu Gamers. Organized win trading and pay-to-legend groups are compromising competitive Hearthstone in China. And this was a report by Radoslav Nidra-Kolev. It's very in-depth. I haven't got time to go over it here. But basically, in Chinese leagues and the Chinese ladder system, there was all sorts of shit going on. And, you know, look, the evidence of win trading, and this was a really robust report. People could, you know, buy, you know, matches and stuff on the ladder, you know, just all sorts of stuff going on out there. And, you know, it was really an issue, and it was an issue that, again, goes to the core of the competitive integrity within that region. And I'm sure, look, there'll be examples of multiple esports, but it's not just esports. If you have seen how we have failed to get a handle on match fixing over here in Europe, in America, because we haven't. We haven't. A few high-profile players getting banned doesn't fix it. It doesn't fix the problem. We've still got an environment where it can thrive. We've still got rules that aren't robust enough to prevent it from happening. And like I said, crucially, we've still got players who it's always going to be worthwhile for, because the upsides outweigh the downsides. Well, let's just have a look at this report in The Guardian. This will blow your fucking mind, in case you didn't see it. I'm sure some of the regular sports fans who follow my stuff will have done. But this is a report about Chinese football, Chinese soccer. And here you go. Match fixing and bribery in Chinese football are endemic. A former footballer and journalist blamed games woes on low player salaries and machinations of local government officials. And this is the thing, business, government, all of these ties, players getting offered £5,000 to swing a match when the teams are making £200 a month, barely enough to support families. As many as 30% of Chinese football matches were rigged. Well, let me tell you, there are going to be businessmen in China right now, gamblers in China right now, who are going to be looking at the development of esports, and they're going to be fucking licking their lips, because we've got international organizations, international governing bodies tackling corruption in sports. What have we got in esports? Idiots like me. That's it. I'm one of the people who are keeping the barbarians from the gate. We're fucked. You know, I can't do it all. I'm old. I'm shit. You know, this is it. So what else is there? What else is there? You know, people didn't even want to look too hard at this. People would just be la, la, la. No one's match fixing. It's all good. It's all just keep the money coming in. This is going to be a nightmare in China. For real, it's going to be. And I feel sorry for all the people betting on those games. My advice would be to fucking just avoid it. But equally as well, I feel sorry for the potential problem down the road, because it will be the players that will carry the can. And again, something will happen. I'm telling you, if we don't go in with our eyes open, I think even if we do, I don't think we can stop it. So that's another worry. But look, ultimately, you know, because I don't want to end the video on a negative note. These are problems that are going to be kind of, you know, growing pains that are going to be unique, I suppose, in a way. Not entirely, but in a unique fashion to the Chinese region. But honestly, I think without a strong presence there, and I'm not sure how I feel about Perfect World, I think we're going to encounter some problems. But I'm hoping that the overall good will outweigh the overall bad, if you know what I mean. I'm pretty sure the benefits of this huge growth, an influx of new players, an influx of new teams, an influx of new investment, an influx of new people watching streams and buying merchandise, the more robust laws that China has, ironically, you know, I'm talking about all the match fixing problems they've got, but they've still got more robust laws about gambling than what we do over here, and what a company has to do to be compliant. That's good. That's actually a consumer protection, right? And on top of that, I think the fact that you're not going to produce a new crop of cheaters out there. I mean, obviously, people are going to cheat. People are going to get banned. But there's no more severe penalty than what's going to happen with the Alipay stuff. I think this is growth that even with the bad things that are going to come in the competitive scene, because it's all of the problems I've talked about are pretty much at a competitive level. It's probably going to be worth it, I guess. Sad as that might make me to admit. And there's just one other thing I want to address as well. Now that it's legit, now that we know we're going to have a Chinese league, multiple Chinese teams, I would love all of the people in esports, you know, from across the world, from Europe, America, Asia, or Oceania, everybody, to Eastern Europe, Russia, you know, I'm probably missing, fuck it, the whole world, right? Okay, you know what the world is, all right? So I want everybody to come and sit down and come up with a solution to this ongoing visa issue that we have. It's going to be worthwhile now. You know, this isn't one or two Chinese teams maybe coming to tournaments, maybe playing in some qualifiers. This is going to be some big Chinese brands with big Chinese teams competing in big tournaments outside of China, and we need to be prepared. And I think the key thing we should use here, now that we're moving into China, is let's all sit down and talk about who we need to approach in China, outside of China, primarily America, where it's incredibly difficult to get the visa paperwork approved. And let's use this Chinese influence and this Chinese money, and let's use it to push the agenda about, look, these are athletes that are coming to your country to compete. We need visas. We've got to have these, and we've got to have them across the board for all athletes. I actually think the weight of the Chinese teams needing this as a requirement could actually get a serious conversation had about cyber athleticism, about esports, you know, in the White House. I'm not talking about Riot beating the drum and being, yeah, we can all get P1 visas now. We did that. You didn't, Riot. You're lying. But certainly, you know, Riot obviously are fully owned by Tencent now, a big Chinese company. Alongside this, esports is going to be a huge growth industry in China over the next 5 years, and they really need to make sure that their brands can get the exposure abroad that traveling and competing entails, and that means you're going to need visas. So I certainly hope we can get that done, because there'd be nothing sadder, I think, than having this exciting period of growth and not being able to enjoy it to its fullest because of some fucking paperwork snafus or some strange snobbery going on in the Department of Immigration. So anyway, there's my thoughts. I'm definitely looking forward to it. I think this is going to be something that really propels us forward as a scene, as a community. I'm looking forward to being a part of it. Maybe one day I get to attend an event in China for CSGO. I think that'll be psych. It'll be awesome. So anyway, so that those are my thoughts. I don't know if you agree with me. You know what to do. If you don't, you can reply below and I'll probably respond. But anyway, thanks a lot for watching the video, and I will see you on the next one.